Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you. It's Monday, March the 28th. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Muhammadu Buhari was elected president of Nigeria 1 year ago today. What do Nigerians think he has achieved?
In my community, for 3 months now, we've not had electricity.
House rent is up, almost about 50%. The cost of food is actually up.
Well, I still think he's trying to figure out how to put things in place.
And preparations are underway for the arrival in the South Sudanese capital, Juba, of rebel leader Riek Machar.
We will be transporting Riek's personal bodyguards and others from the northern city of Malakal to here in Juba.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
One year has elapsed since Muhammadu Buhari was elected Nigeria's president in the first democratic transition of power between political parties in the country's history. When he was elected, many Nigerians saw him as a beacon of hope who would be able to fix Nigeria's problems and improve their lives. But has Buhari lived up to expectations? Sam Olukoya in Lagos has been finding out.
President Muhammadu Buhari won the presidential election using the campaign slogan, Change. By change, he meant Nigeria will see positive changes if elected. But 1 year on, many say they are yet to see the much-anticipated positive changes. 30-year-old Joseph Blabo, who lives in the poor Makoko neighborhood in Lagos, believes that things are rather changing for the worse.
We thought voting in for these people would bring a drastic change for us and not to make things worse. Yet things keep getting worse day by day.
In my community, for 3 months now, we've not had electricity.
Now look at the fuel scarcity that has been in Lagos for a while now. The way we are seeing it, this 1 year is not a well-done job thing and not a kind of a thumbs up.
Atiku Samuel, a 34-year-old mathematician, says rising inflation since President Buhari came to power makes it difficult for him to cope as a family man.
House rent is up, almost about 50%. The cost of food is actually up. Things that we buy for 10,000 naira now, you have to do 15,000. So a lot of things like that. Cost of clothing, I mean, diapers, we buy diapers. My baby is still very small. That's actually jumped astronomically. Things we buy for 1,300 naira, we're now doing for about 2,000 naira.
32-year-old Stanley Achonu of Budget, a Lagos-based group which keeps track of government's expenditure, agrees that President Buhari has failed to live up to expectations in several areas. He, however, says the president has recorded successes in other areas, including reforms to curb corruption and improvement of Nigeria's international image. Achonu said the president has also successfully addressed the insecurity caused by the terror group Boko Haram.
Unlike before, I would say that the attempt to, you know, frontally confront this evil, this menace, has just been, unprecedented. Unlike before, where we weren't exactly sure if the fight was full-hearted, there's been a wholehearted attempt to confront the evil. One thing we can't deny is the fact that there is a frontal attempt to confront this evil that is terrorizing the country.
The Boko Haram insurgency has claimed thousands of lives and displaced more than 2 million people since 2009. 26-year-old Ayomide Faleye, a research analyst, is optimistic that the government will do more.
Well, I still think he's trying to figure out how to put things in place, especially as regards how to improve on the economy and how he can, with the democratic setting, make things better for Nigerians. Yes, we should give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he will do more, considering the time frame.
For President Buhari to do more, he must address some crucial issues like widespread corruption, a declining economy, and the falling government revenue.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. Ending the Boko Haram insurgency in northern Nigeria was one of the key pledges made by Buhari before he was elected. His predecessor, Goodluck Jonathan, was hugely unpopular in northern Nigeria because of his failure to tackle the insurgency. Isaac Mugabe has been talking to DW's Muhammad Al-Amin in northern Nigeria and asked him first what Nigerians in that part of the country felt about Buhari's first year in office.
Actually, northern Nigerians have differed in their views on the performance of the government so far. Some have already labeled the government as failure because of the bad shape of the economy, lack of job creation, stock market, petroleum and electricity supply scarcity, insecurity, gender inequality, extrajudicial impunity. They say all are very worse today than when Buhari took office. But others are of the view that it was too early to pass judgment on the government. That is less than 1 year now in office.
Are people, particularly in northern Nigeria, that have suffered the brunt of the Boko Haram insurgency, happier now than before?
I can say yes, because before now, Adamawa, Borno and Yobe states were completely run down by Boko Haram insurgents. But now things are getting better. Military are doing well. There may be killings here and there, but not to the level of where a whole state is overrun. So people in this part of the country are more concerned about the peace. They believe the present administration will get them out of these security challenges and rebuild the region as promised by the president himself. So they have high hope on the president that things are going to be better under his leadership.
Presumably, there could be some contrast between life under President Buhari and his predecessor, Goodluck Jonathan, in northern Nigeria. What can you tell us to this effect?
Generally, what people are discrediting Jonathan's administration is his failure to address the security challenges. They see the President Jonathan's government as creating or giving more room for Boko Haram to expand its territory. Comparing to what is happening now, they are being minimized in so many places.
Al-Amin Muhammad in northern Nigeria.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
More than 1,400 military and civilian officials loyal to the South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar have arrived in the capital Juba, nurturing hopes of the implementation of a stalled peace agreement and the establishment of a transitional government of national unity. The peace deal has been dogged by disagreements over power sharing. Tens of thousands of people have been killed in the fighting since it broke out in December 2013. James Shimanyula reports.
At last, after a long wait that has been characterized with the continued suffering of the people of South Sudan due to more than 2 years of fighting, the formation of a transitional government of national unity could be in sight. Now, security and logistical problems that prevented the formation of the government 2 months ago have been completed. This is what allowed Riek Machar's both military and civilian officials to make it to Juba ahead of the arrival of the rebel leader and his bodyguards. Also expected sooner than later is his 3,000-strong force, as former Botswana President Festus Mogae, head of the commission overseeing the formation of the government, explains.
With the help of the British and the Norwegians, we will be transporting Riek's personal bodyguards and others from the northern city of Malakal to here in Juba. The international community is pressurizing everybody to form a transitional government of national unity, which can speak with one voice.
The international community which Festus Mogae is referring to is the Troika, comprising the European Union, China, Norway, Britain, United States and the United Nations, which have played an important diplomatic and financial role in pushing rebel leader Riek Machar and his principal military and political rival, President Salva Kiir, to sign a peace agreement, confirming the arrival of rebel leader Riek Machar is South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei.
We are happy to receive them today. This marks actually the beginning of the real implementation of the agreement. The Joint Integrated Police will be organized and set up to take over the responsibility of the security of Juba Town and the other three towns of South Sudan.
Those towns are in two of the three of the newly created regions of Greater Upper Nile and Greater Bahar El Ghazal. Confirming the arrival of Riek Machar's officials in Juba was one of his spokesmen, William Ezekiel.
This means that we are serious in the implementation of the peace agreement, and it means a lot to the people of South Sudan. This is the move and the step people have been longing to see.
And that report was compiled by James Shimanyula. Next to the German capital, Berlin, where some streets still bear the names of former German colonies and colonialists in Africa, almost 100 years after the end of German rule on the continent. Some Berliners want the names to be changed. Others want to keep them the way they are. This report by Daniel Peltz is read now by Crispin Wachideo.
Peter's Allee may seem like a perfectly ordinary Berlin address. Mnyaka Sururu Mboro is not bothered by the look of Peter's Allee, but the street name makes him angry, because it is named after the colonialist Karl Peters.
After his killings, hanging, he was ordered back, and he wasn't honored because of his brutality. Then I couldn't understand the people. They are totally very proud of him, and even they are very proud today having such a street in this quarter.
For Tanzanian born Mboro, Karl Peters is a household name. He was the driving force behind the foundation of the German colony German East Africa, which included today's Tanzania. Mboro and other activists want to give Peter's Allee a completely different name. Their association, Berlin Postcolonial, meaning Postcolonial Berlin, has been fighting for years to rename three streets in the capital's so-called African Quarter. Christian Kopp is a historian with the association.
This quarter was rather kind of forgotten, and even people living here often do not know what it is all about. So that's why we asked for a critical comments on the street names. And then for the three streets where we asked for and demanded a renaming, we want to have the new names taken out of the many, many people fighting against colonialism, German colonialism in the former German colonies.
Besides renaming the three streets, Kopp also wants to raise awareness about the historical connotation of other streets with names like Togo Straße or Cameroon Straße. Other Berliners have formed their own association to oppose any plans to rename the streets in question. The association chairman, Johann Ganz, has been living in the African Quarter since 1972.
These names belong to our community, to our neighborhood, and to our culture. We know of the aftermath. We don't want it to be forgotten, but to remind people what can happen when we are involved in such activities.
The activists then came up with a proposal that street names would not change, but that the names would refer to different, less controversial people. For example, Peter's Allee would no longer be named after the German colonialist Karl Peters, but after theologian Hans Peters. The ball is now in the court of the local district assembly, which needs to decide what happens to Peter's Allee and other disputed names.
And that report was written by Daniel Peltz. And now, as always on a Monday, it's time to join the Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Crime Fighters Land of Chongwe, a radio drama about land grabbing in Africa. This is the sixth episode called Putting the Pieces Together. In the last episode, flower farm worker Zamari was busy mobilizing several young people. They're planning to retake the land that once belonged to their families. It was first taken away from them by Chief Awombo. Then the government gave it to the foreign company Roses International. Meanwhile, private detective Mweri has been hitting a brick wall in her investigation into Chief Awombo's death. Despite receiving death threats, Mweri hasn't given up. Now she's visiting Pambo in his police cell. Pambo found Chief Awombo's body together with Zumari, and he's now the main suspect.
Don't mind the jailbirds, Mweri. Pambo's cell is right at the end. He still refuses to tell me anything even after I release his friend.
Zumari's out? Since when?
Since 2 days ago. He told me he knew nothing about the chief's disappearance or death. I believed him, and I set him free. Pambo's the one who called to inform me when he discovered Awombo's body. Pambo, you have a visitor. Mweri, 5 minutes. That's all you've got.
Thank you, Inspector Mwamto.
Mweri, I swear on my father's grave, I did not kill Chief Awombo. Zumari betrayed me. We both found the chief's...
Keep your voice down, Pambo. Just tell me the truth. When was the last time you saw Chief Awombo alive?
It was the day before he was reported missing.
What? You saw Chief Awombo the day before he disappeared? Where?
At the Rose Farm. Oh, yes, I remember now. We worked overtime that day. And as we were leaving, the chief was coming out of Mr. Gamble's office. You know, the owner of the farm.
What do you mean by we? Who else was there?
Zumari and me. The rest of the workers had all gone home. I remember the chief looked very angry.
What happened? Tell me what happened next. Where did the chief go? Was anyone following him?
No, there was no one following them.
Them? You mean the chief and Mr. Gamble?
No, I mean Chief Awombo and Zumari. Zumari offered to walk the chief home. I went home alone that day.
Pambo, did Zumari's family lose land that was given to Chief Awombo?
Yes, but so did my family and many others. People said it was a gift to the chief for his role in the struggle for independence.
Oh my goodness, that's it?
That's what?
Don't you get it? Zumari's family loses land to Chief Awombo, and...
Hey, no, that can't be true. You're mistaken, Mweri. It can't be Zumari.
Inspector Mwamto? Inspector Mwamto? Inspector Mwamto, Zumari must be Awombo's murderer. Can't you see? All the evidence points to him. He had a reason to resent the chief. He was the last person to see him and the first to see him again after he disappeared.
It sounds plausible. But there's one thing that doesn't add up. If Zumari killed Chief Awombo because of a historical grudge over land, why did he agree to inform the police when he and Pambo found the body? Isn't that just plain stupid?
True. But Zumari knew that the finger of blame would automatically point at Gamble. After all, Chief Awombo and Mr. Gamble were hardly the best of friends.
Yeah, that's also possible. And of course, there was the reward of 1 million for whoever found the chief. Wow. I'm impressed, Mweri.
Pambo is innocent. Release him from his cell. You need to arrest and question Zumari.
Not so fast, Private Detective. What you say makes sense. But we need proof, hard evidence. I need to bring Zumari in for questioning.
Oh, confession.
Yes, if he confesses, so much the better. This case has given me sleepless nights.
You're not the only one.
Maybe when all this is over, we could have a cup of coffee together. You know, Mary, it wouldn't hurt if we got to know each other better.
I'm sorry to disappoint you. But...
No. It's fine. What was I thinking? Forget I said anything.
I just wanted to say I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I don't drink coffee. I like tea.
Really? Well, tea it is then.
Thank you, Inspector Mwamto. I have to go now. I hope I can trust you with the information I just shared with you.
Of course. You have my word.
What in the world was that?
Oh my God! It's my car! Someone's breaking into my car. Mwamto, help me!
Stay where you are. I'll be right back.
Thank you. Thank you all once again for accepting my invitation to gather here at the Rose Farm, the land of our forefathers. Mm-hmm. As you are all aware, Chief Awombo is supposed to be buried right here tomorrow. The government wants to appease the community with this gesture. Chief Awombo buried in the land of Chongwe. But our miserable living and working conditions will stay the same. And the land will remain in the hands of Roses International. We have to take action.
Yes.
But Zumari, I'm not sure it's such a good idea.
This is not a time for doubt, Ekwaba.
Zumari, my fellow Chongweans, listen, why don't we just let the law take its course?
The law? You think the law will help us, Djembe?
Yes.
We lost our land. Our chief was murdered. Pambo is still in police custody as a scapegoat because the real killer is Mr. Gamble. Yes. And you talk about the law? From now on, this is the law.
Yes. Yes.
The law.
Yes. I'm a machete? Yes.
There are enough here for each of us, mm-hmm. including you, Ekwaba and Djembe. It is time to take back what belongs to us.
Yes.
Yes.
Guys, please, don't do this. If you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Yes.
True. Yes. But what's better? To fight for what's rightfully ours, or continue to live as beggars in our own land.
Fight.
By tomorrow evening, we'll either have reclaimed the land of Chongwe or joined our chief in the afterlife.
Yes.
This is incitement. Zumari, you're calling on us to destroy private property, perhaps even to kill innocent people. I can't be part of this.
Coward.
You are not going anywhere. You are either with us or against us, Djembe.
Yes.
Which side are you on?
That question from Zumari concludes this episode of Land of Chongwe. Will his plan to retake the land of Roses International by force succeed? Is Zumari guilty of murdering Chief Awombo as Mweri believes? The plot thickens in the next episode. You can always listen to this or previous episodes again by visiting our website at dw.com/crimefighters or on Facebook. Bye for now.
A reminder of our main stories before we leave you here on Africa Link. 1 year has elapsed since the election of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Preparations are underway for the arrival in the South Sudanese capital Juba of rebel leader Riek Machar. And another item of news, authorities in Mali have arrested two men believed to be linked to an Al-Qaeda attack on a beach resort town in neighbouring Ivory Coast that killed 19 people earlier this month. We welcome your comments on this programme, either in a text message to country code 49 160 957 595 10, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening, and bye now.